This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
A silent storm begins to brew in an ancient land of darkness. With tumultuous force from the crust of the earth, two worlds come together as one, from the past and the present, celebrating culture and spirit, paving the pathway to our future. It's time for dreaming. Urban dreaming. Finding your voice. Finding your spirit. Joy 94.9. Wawinjeka, Joy 94.9 would like to acknowledge and pay respect to the sovereign peoples of the past, present and future generations of the Kulin Nations on whose unceded land we work, live and broadcast from. We would also like to acknowledge all our brother boys and sister girls of the LGBTI communities.
Yes, you're in Urban Dreaming. This is Rami on the mic.
And this is Layla.
And we're here from 8 till 9pm, so stay tuned, guys. We've got a deadly show coming up this evening. In the studio with us tonight, we have Leah Purcell.
So cool.
Been waiting for this moment, actually. We've also got a bit of a chat about NAIDOC Week, and we're going to be talking in general about some really fantastic music. Please stay with us. We're with you, and we're going to have fun. And this song right now is...
I don't know.
Pelopolis.
By Tasman Keith.
Enjoy.
I've been raising the streets that they don't know. Hold up, police stretching knees for the popo. On top of me was the keys to the sideshow. Now motherfuckers run down motherfuckers. I'm supposed to be locked up with three cousins, but my open mind always set me free. Smuggled in some bubble time, watch out for the heat. They want us dead, multiply by three. Mabo labo, mabo labo, lay. Mabo labo, mabo labo, lay. Mabo labo, mabo labo. They want us dead, multiply by three. Mabo labo, mabo labo, lay. Mabo labo, mabo labo, lay. Mabo labo, mabo labo, lay. They want us dead, multiply by three.
Being in the belly of the beast, indeed I did left to reap. Sleep, release I see, made him sleep. Three, money a piece of yours, got peace. Our death always contest, better with the vest strap up our chest. Our death always complex, fucking on us with no consent. Command, my word, none dead, we learn. Incarnation and what we face in, exaggeration or formulation. I made a statement, I am a statement, I blood the pavement, me fate, no never. Uncle dead and my auntie dead, till my uncle spits this shit forever.
Mabo labo, mabo labo, lay. Mabo labo, mabo labo, lay. Mabo labo, mabo labo, lay. They want us dead, multiply by... Mabo labo, mabo labo, hey. Mabo labo, mabo labo, hey. Mabo labo, mabo labo, hey. They want us dead, multiply by three.
Make some bread. From writing in my black, I was on a mat. Found myself, got attached. Had to get back. Give myself a bit and crash. Run up a cliff. Just to show how big I is. I made some rap. Oh, from writing in my black, I was on a mat. Found myself, got attached. Had to get back. Give myself a bit and crash. Run up a cliff. Just to show how big I is. I Mabo labo, mabo labo, lay. Mabo labo, mabo labo, lay. Mabo labo, mabo labo, lay. They want us dead, won't you fly by three?
The word blotting comes from my brother's fist. Just the word people jumbled up. People pull up the same thing.
Hello, this is Bart Willoughby on Urban Dreaming. What a great way to dream.
All right. Welcome back to Urban Dreaming with Layla and
Sarami.
Ooh. So you were listening to Tasman Keith, and he is actually the son of an Aboriginal hip hop pioneer, YMC. And that was his latest single, My Palepales, which steps up to the plate and heralds the arrival of a real contender and uncompromising track, both lyrically and musically.
Joy 94.9.
We have a live guest who's one of our most amazing performing artists of all time. Just want to make acknowledgement also to this lady, because she's been there since day one with regards to getting me inspired and helping me to understand the craft of what acting is.
Wow, the original trailblazer for all of us, eh?
Yeah. Definitely. This woman has been there, she's done that, she's helped others, and I'll tell you a little bit about her in regards to what she's done. So she's a multi-talented, yes, Leah Purcell is a theatre, film and television actress, singer, director, playwright and author. She is the youngest of seven children of Aboriginal Australian descent, and her father was a butcher and a boxing trainer. After a difficult adolescence, looking after a sick mother who died while Leah was in her late teens, and problems with alcohol and teenage motherhood, Purcell left Murgon Mission and moved to Brisbane and became involved in the community theatre. In 1996, she moved to Sydney to become a presenter on a music video cable television station called Red Music Channel. And this was followed by the roles of the ABC television series Police Rescue, Fallen Angels, and the excellent drama starring Gabriel Byrne and Laura Linney on Genderbine. Yes, she co-wrote and starred in a play called Box of Boney, which I loved, I saw that. And also that played at the Belvoir Street Theatre.
And speaking of Belvoir Street Theatre as well, more recently you were writer and actor for The Drover's Wife.
And, after that she basically, just went on to more freelance work. She then wrote and directed a documentary, Black Chicks Talking, which won the 2002 Inside Film IF Award. She appeared in the acclaimed Australian film Lantana, brilliant film, and the stage on the stage for the Vagina Monologues. And then she went on to appear in the three 2004 films, including Somersault, starring Abby Cornish, and The Proposition, as well as playing the role of Condoleezza Rice in David. And David has played this. And Stuff Happens in Sydney and Melbourne. Yes, The Drover's Wife, we mentioned before. Also, Redfern Now, Clever Man, and the brand new play Brand New Day. Afterglow, she sang for that as well. That was actually back in the...
Oh, gosh, that's 93. Ooh. Yeah, that's a long time ago.
So here she is right now in the studio.
Hey, thank you.
How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be here. I'm a bit late with telling everyone happy NAIDOC. That was last week.
Nah.
I'm a little bit behind.
NAIDOC's all year round.
That's right. It's a black day every day. But I just want to acknowledge country that we're on to the Kulin Nations for me to be here and telling my story and working down here on Wentworth.
Yeah, how exciting. So speaking of Wentworth, so you play a deadly character, Rita Connors, or in the original Rita the Beater. How's it all been going?
Yeah, great. I got to remind myself that I'm 47 and not 27. Ugh. Auntie thinks she can still chuck herself around.
Yeah, you can.
But it's been great. It's been 20 years in the making, really, in the sense of I was going to not retire from acting, but after The Drover's Wife, I was sort of saying I wrote that for a lead role for myself and it went really well. I was going to say I'll put it on the back burner so I can focus on my direction and writing leading up to feature film land, and then this offer comes along and I sort of told everyone, oh, hang on a minute, if I put my actor's hat on, this is the ultimate. It's a TV show that's established around the world, just won a Logie for the best drama on Australian TV.
That's it.
I was the sort of the new story carrier, the new blood coming through because of other characters being killed off.
Yeah, that's
as
it,
you do, you got to have someone to come through and carry a
that's
new storyline.
Right. It's got to be Blackfellas.
So it was a great honour and a privilege, and they allowed me to collaborate on the storyline and looked at cultural stuff through
that's
our characters.
Well, that's what I was noticing, because I noticed that the first episode you were the top billing.
Yeah,
And then also the interactions between the Blackfellas are pretty authentic.
Yeah.
So I've got to ask.
Yep.
Do you have a lot of input with the direction?
When it comes to us, we'll suggest stuff, and we said we're out there acting and we want to represent. We're on mainstream TV. It's around the world. I'm surprised at the tweets and all that social media stuff that I get. things in other languages I can't read, but it's wow. so cool. And me and Radhi, Radhawai Hick, who plays my sister, yeah. we wanted to keep it real for the mob so that they can watch something that they can connect to. You know, there's yeah. a great line coming up in the episode tonight that I dropped in. You know, we do a bit of ad-lib and especially we had the beautiful Beck Cole, Murray woman. Well, she's not a Murray. She's from Northern Territory, I think, Tennant Creek Mob. She come on and directed and we sort of went we went to town, you know, in, you know, the black fella sign language yeah, and lingo, you know. And she went, yeah, go on, you know. And, you know, because a couple of times the other non-Indigenous directors be a little bit iffy and I said, yeah, but that's how we go because we're shorthand when we talk, you know. I said, yeah, me and Radhi could do this with no, not even doing them lines, you know. We only say it because you fellas need to know yeah, what we're on
that's
about.
That's it, eh? You got to check that the cameras are rolling.
Yeah. So they're great in that and good on them for trusting us and going with it. And I've made sure that I've, you know, spoken to elders. I had to do a bit of a mourning scene for, you know, what happens in series 7 and got permissions, which helped with our backstory as our characters. So it's been great. You got to train for it. So it's great to be back into training and yeah. hitting the bag and
oh, deadly.
Swimming like a young one. But anyway.
Don't. How did you find though, because, you know, as a black fella coming into or on set, I mean, I'm sure you've had a lot of experience with it anyway, you know, as a black fella coming onto a white set, like
yeah, look,
your struggles
yeah,
with that.
Yeah, it's daunting in any circumstance, whether you're black or white in this circumstance, it's an established show and it's an ensemble piece with some strong-minded, beautiful, talented women that have had paved the way with the show. So I'm just the typical black, I just give respect. You know, it's their turf. I'm there to come and play. I'm a team player. I love the collaboration. If I came in big note and let, you know, letting the ego fly everywhere, then, you know, person needed to be knocked down.
Yeah.
But that's not in me at all. That's not my go. So yeah. we've sort of worked in with the family. You know, we just wanted to blend in. We wanted to do the best that we could because they set the bar. But it's nice what me and Radhi both say, it's nice to have another black fella there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm actually quite shy and I sort of sit back and it's nice to have Radhi who's miss out there, you
yeah,
know, that younger generation.
I always say too, like when there's one black fella, that's yourself, there's yeah. one black fella. But when there's two of you, there's 200 of you. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
So it was nice to actually share this experience with her. I've known her since she was a little girl. She went to school with my daughter. And
lovely.
And so it was nice to sort of to share that. And she's a great little actor. And we just have fun. You know, we've had a lot of emotional stuff. But at the same time, we laughing and carrying on and talking silly on the side, you know. So it's good.
Lovely.
It's always interesting, isn't it, when you see play actors like yourself and others who when they get on the stage or they're on television in front of the camera, like they turn it on, and then as soon as they're off, like they become this shy, reserved character, and it's really bizarre to see because, you know, particularly someone like yourself who's done a lot of starring roles and, you know, and obviously got a lot of accolades and awards for what you do, but the thing is, like, yeah, you were saying I'm usually just generally a shy, reserved person, like, I'd love to know more about that. And I guess how do you process knowing the difference between performing and then being back to, you know?
Yeah, look, I think everyone puts a little bit of themselves into a role. I think you've got to find a way to connect. But you've got to have something so that you aren't afraid to project performance. You aren't afraid to be vulnerable. You aren't afraid to be angry. You're not afraid to go there emotionally. And I think you have to find that's where your other character comes in so you can do that. Because when you step away from stuff, you want to be able to find yourself and come back down. But the funny thing is with this Rita Connors, it's probably the closest character that's truthfully to who I am. I consider myself quite a loyal person.
Yeah.
I'd give you the shirt off my back if anyone needed help. Mess with me, I'll have a crack. You know?
Boxing the pony.
Yeah, boxing the pony, you know. But you know what I mean? But she wears it. She's there to protect. She's a person who likes family and you know, community aspect, I guess, of prison life in that aspect. But it's interesting because sometimes, you know, a few years ago I said, who is actually Leah Purcell? Where's she gone, you know? And I think I've sort of found her through my writing, you know, and because performance, you've always got to have something to protect you from, you've got to have a tough skin so you can't put yourself, you do put yourself all out there emotionally, but I've always got to have the character's skin on so that I feel safe when I walk out on stage and then I can do what I need to do.
That's true.
And then I take that off and I leave the burdens that comes with performance of the high energy and the high emotional, and that I can sort of step away and look up. You've got to look after yourself, you know, because it all the emotional stuff that you do, especially on Wentworth, especially the first play that I ever did, you've got to learn how to turn that off, you know, that emotion off and care for yourself. That's because you can mess with your head a bit.
So true, hey.
Yeah,
that's really beautiful, and thanks for sharing that. And what kind of skin is that, possum?
Nagam. Probably goanna now.
Look out.
Old and dry. No,
yeah, because I mean, on the original Wentworth, you know, Rita the Beater,
yeah,
she's the one that comes in and outsmarts the main villain, eh?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
I know you can't give the freak. That's
too much away. Yeah,
you can't give too much away, but you know, like, that's pretty exciting that the queen of the bikies, as Davy Thompson would say, you know, Davy Thompson, you know, the queen is a black fella.
Yeah,
and she's come in, and this is who she is. Yeah. So that's really exciting for mob to see. Yeah. It's groundbreaking.
Yeah, it is, and especially like tonight, Rita steps up tonight because people are saying, oh, she's just sitting back watching, and you know, I love listening to reading the tweets and all of that sort of stuff. And I said, there's a reason it's coming, and it starts tonight. So, and what you see tonight, it takes so long to do the physical stuff. Like, it's only 2 minutes probably on screen, but it takes like anywhere to 4 to 5 hours. And in episode 12, which I'm not giving anything away on, there's a big action sequence, and it took 12 hours, and it was my day. So,
actually, you know what? I've got a little surprise for you now.
Yeah?
I just found this on the net. Check this out.
No.
What is it?
Rita. Rita Connors. Rita Connors, I think, is a very loyal woman. She's very family-based. That's what I got, you know, when we sat down and spoke about her backstory with producers and what kind of person she is. So I felt that there's a great loyalty to her family because she actually sacrifices herself for her family's safety with an incident that happens, you know, that develops the story. And when you first meet Rita, she's actually got to prove herself to the other prisoners. So she's actually a more of an observer, and she's quiet in that sense. She's working out the lay of the land. That's where do I sit? Where am I supposed to be? So she's actually quite quiet, reserved, and observant. And I kind of like that because characters I have played have been out there, loud and proud and crazy. So it's actually been nice to play something opposite. The loyalty is the one that keeps coming back. She's very loyal, I think, but she's a chick that would give you the back of her, you know, the shirt off her back to help. I think she's very much someone who will be there to help someone if they're in time of need. But if you cross her, I think you wouldn't want to mess with her.
So there you go. Yes. Bit of an insight for those who've never seen Wentworth. That's definitely a show worthwhile to check out with Leah Purcell, the newcomer for the show, that is. So, yeah, I guess in regards, I'm just sort of looking back at your process again because I'm always interested to see how people tick in regards to their, I guess, their art and craft, you know, what they do as a performing artist, you know, because we're all performing artists and we all have different ways.
Yeah.
What do you do in order to sort of sustain yourself and to find, I guess, your ways of, because I remember you mentioned before about how who is the real Leah, you know, and you had to sort of to go through your writing to actually just self-discover. So I guess my question is to you is like, what do you do to debrief yourself and how do you find, I guess, your centre?
Yeah, look, I was a run amok when I was young, you know, when I was quite too young probably to be run amok. So I sort of got that out of my system, and I think you have to care for yourself. You got to look after yourself. When I'm in when I'm in work mode, I'm so professional, I make myself sick. there's no alcohol, there's no late nights. It's like I'm an elite athlete. I train for it. Once I know that I've got a show coming up, I'll start walking, you know, I can't run anymore, lower back issues, but you know, at least going for walks. And I started swimming and eating right and devoting and making sure that I've got space in my house where I can come home and do a bit of stretching. Although I've got two grandkids now and a dog that when I go on the ground, it's just game on kind of thing, they think. But I think you have to have that. You have to treat yourself like that. Like, I think a lot of actors think that you can get away with running amok all the time, but it does show in your work. You know, you've got to be responsible for the performance that you give. You've got to be responsible for your audience's entertainment. You know, they've come, they've paid tickets. I say every night's an opening night. Some people think I'm mad because they said, but yeah, you can't cane yourself. And I said, yeah, but this is what I have to do. This is what I'm paid to do.
Yeah.
I'm paid to give these people what they've come to pay. I said, so it's like asking Jonathan Thurston not to be brilliant on a football field, or one of your, you know, your AFL. I know I'm in AFL country and I don't know many, but an elite athlete, you're asking them to pull back, or, you know, just come and have a drink and you'll be right, you know. It's too easy to grab a glass of wine and calm down at night. Mm. It's easier to find meditation, go through your process, turn yourself off, hug your family, mm. pat your dog, go for a walk. You know, sometimes when I was doing some shows, we'd go and train at night and you come down quicker. I'm loving swimming now, in the sense that you can actually talk yourself through your day as you're swimming, doing the laps, and then let all that stuff go. And especially because, especially so emotional stuff, you've got to have an outlet for it. If you're not letting it go on stage, which a lot of my roles have been, where you do get to the end of your outlet, and just a little psychological games of, when I take my shoes off, I'm done. Mm. I leave those issues in my dressing room. Mm. I pray to my ancestors before every performance for guidance and clarity, and that my voice is strong. I pray afterwards that they're with me, you know, and you just make sure you get connecting to people too every now and then. If you need, you know, someone will say the right words. You don't have to necessarily tell them you're having a bad day or you need some, but you just ring up and say hello and talk shop. Small yarn, and you just put that away. But, you know, if you're serious about being in this industry, you have to be serious about it.
That's it.
It's such a hard industry. It's a fickle industry. You've got to, if you're the flavor of the month, you've got to work that till it becomes years.
Yeah.
And I have no life. You know, I write. I'm here tonight. I'm glad that I got out of the room. Yeah. But I'm going to go home and I've got writing to do, you know. So yeah. I've got a late start tomorrow. You know, if you're serious about it, you know, I make people sick. I go, here comes Lee with a little bag. Yes, I'm off to do work, people. I'm not I don't socialize much, but I'll say hello. I'll share love, give a cuddle. I said, but I've got shit to do. Mm. I've got stuff to do, man. I'm hustling.
Yeah. That's it, eh?
I've got to pay the bills. And I've got a family to support.
Hey, yes. And that's the thing, like, you know, once you get that momentum, you don't want to stop.
No, you
know,
can't.
And that's really good, proper, practical advice of how to, because you mentioned before, like, mob just turned to the drink, especially when we're on tour, things like that. It's like that's become part of our ritual.
Yeah.
So you mentioned swimming and talking up, you know, like that's stuff.
Well, that's
that
definitely
we need
the arts industry in full stop, because, you know, you have openings, you have closings, there's alcohol involved.
You know, that's that culture
you know, and to be professional, like, you know, I know we're mob and we do that, but like when I call people up to audition for me for a role, I want them to be professional. Mm. You know, sometimes we get a bit lax and we talk about what they did the night before, and I want to say to them, don't tell me that. I'm your director. You know, I'm a black woman and I'll flog you. I'm a grandmother now. Knock it off. You know, but I do that with anyone, black, white or brindle. I say, I'm straight up. I said, I don't deal with alcohol and drug issues. Mm. If you've got those, you got to sort them out. I said, I run a tight ship and I'm not afraid to crack whips, because you've got to strive for perfection if you want a sustainable career, you know, to have, and you've got to be hungry and you've got to want that. Sometimes we're too easy and we just stop at, oh, you're good. I don't want to be just good.
Mm.
I want to be amazing and I never want to get there.
You know, brilliant.
Because I want to, but I'd never want to get there, because it's something I'm striving for. And the day that I do, then I'm pushing up daisies, or I'm retiring to go and make sandwiches. Or something.
It's like they say, isn't it? Practice makes permanence, not perfect.
Yeah.
All right, guys, stay tuned. We've got another deadly track coming up, and we'll be right back with Leah Purcell.
If you's a black lady, let me break it down for you real slow. All the women in the world need to know, no matter what, you are a queen. The definition of a magical seed.
That's right.
Shout out to all the mamas on the rise. All the ladies got the men hypnotized. About to give you a sweet surprise. Sit back, relax, and close your eyes. I'm a typical strong black sister. Fierce passion flows through my veins.
That's right.
All my TV girls, I will be with you. Cause it's a powerful time for change.
Beautiful queen that I've ever seen. Putting it down for your family. On your grind, you always smile. Being real on the inside. Earth, wind, fire, shine, star. Essence, system, wherever you are. Hold the seeds of birth. You're the queen of mother earth.
perfection, nothing less. Leader to her people, the very best. She keeps her head up through all the hard times. Never lets her see us, we're the soldier at the front line. She knows exactly what it's like to have nothing but abundance of determination to make something. It all started with a whisper. Carried on the wind to bring freedom to her sister. It dates back from the sands of time. Women had it worse than race and genocide combined. Tell them in the darkness, resilience thrives with an unmatched beauty and fire in her eyes. She burns as bright as the stars in the sky, cause the warrior spirit is very hard to come by. So when they ask what's a woman's worth, you say the greatest gift alive on earth.
Beautiful queen that I've never seen, putting it down for your family. On your grind, you always smile, being real on the inside. Earth, wind, fire, shine a star, essence to stand wherever you are. Hold your sleeves open, you're the queen of mother.
Sister, your black diamond shining bright. I see you carry yourself with beautiful pride. Giving up, raising kids for our future. A smile without a reason, you're a gift of a teacher. You're the strongest woman that I've ever seen. Work hard, projecting positivity. Holding it down, I'm grown in a savage street. Giving room to dream, no silver spoon to feed. Baby girl, be proud, make the best choice in life. Keep your head up, this is my only advice. Your love stirs in the belly of the streets. Careful what you learn, finding your inner peace. You're more loved than you could possibly see. Like a rose that grew in these concrete seas. Each day there's hope, always remember, I got your back in any type of weather.
Beautiful queen that I've ever seen, holding it down for your family. On your grind, you always smile, being real on the inside. Earth, wind, fire, shining star, essence to stand wherever you are. Hold your sleeves open, you're the queen of mother.
This is for my sisters on the streets, feeling open, go on, give it to the feet, kick your head up. And this is for my single moms at home, raising baby all alone, cause dad's gonna keep your head up. And this is for my independent girls that be taking on the world, not a father, keep your head up. And this is for my frontline women who've been there from the beginning, stand tall and keep your head up.
And you were just listening to Sister Girl by Aretha. Now that song, how deadly was that song? That came out only a few days ago, actually. And Aretha is made up of three staunch deadly artists, Lady Lash, Miss Hood, and Dizzy D. Dizzy D I know quite well, actually. She's from up Cairns Way, which is where I was born and raised, on Yidinji country there. Now that song, it's actually, despite it being a cool sounding word, that is Aretha, the band's name is a soulful acronym that means our earth, the heart acknowledges. Pretty deadly, hey. And just really quickly, as a group of Indigenous women in an often male-dominated musical genre, their mission is simple: to make powerful music that has meaning, a message, substance, and connects with real people going through real life situations, healing the world one song at a time.
That was deadly.
Yeah.
That was really tight.
Three strong matriarchs there as well. Those girls, I've seen them perform separately for their own works, and to be a strong collaboration together, it's just they're going to kill it, honestly. So,
and I mean, you know, they released it at the right time, NAIDOC, and the theme being Because of Her We Can.
Beautiful timing. And everything, you know, happens for the right reason and the right time, doesn't it?
That's it, eh?
So we're in the studio with Leah Purcell, and we're going to make the best of the time we have with her, because this is a busy woman here. Leah, thanks again for your time. This is really beautiful of you. Like I said, I've been an avid follower, and obviously you've been one of my mentors as well for many a years now. And it's interesting because not only have you seen young fellas grow and develop with their artistry, but also I think it's also worked both ways for us to see the development and artistry of you and how where you're going as well with your journey. Mm. It's been really interesting to see. And, you know, the whole thing about playing strong roles, particularly for Indigenous representation, is that something you choose to do often, or is this something that you find you fall into just naturally?
No, look, I think it's so important as us as black fellas to represent right. I think playing the black roles are the roles that I absolutely give my utmost, because we can't fail and we shouldn't want to fail, or we shouldn't want to do stuff half-hearted, because that's our mob we're representing. And I love those characters because I can take a little bit of my mum and put it in somewhere. I can take a little bit of an aunt, or I can take it a little bit of a sister girl that you might dare down the road, and you give that character something and people can see themselves in that. Therefore, you're reaching your audience, and you can change people's lives with performances, you know, and that's what keeps me engaged, because there's times where, you know, people might get bored with performance, or they just do what they need to do to get over the line. But for me personally, I like to keep myself engaged, so I push myself and find different things. And it's important that we're telling our stories for our people. And I've always made sure that when I, through my writing, like especially in Box the Pony was my first attempt, where when mob came to see it, they had the upper hand in the theatre house. And, you know, to watch the non-Indigenous people sort of be left behind, it was a really nice psychological thing that was happening in the theatre, you know, because they're normally in the forefront. But now I put mob through that. And I think that's what we have to do, because we have to sell tickets, and 99.5% of our audience that does it is our non-Indigenous brothers and sisters. So you have to cater. You've got to be smart. You've got to cater for the theatre of the world, what you're writing for. You've got to cater for the television. You've got to cater for the films. But at the same time, you still have to be clever and put us through that, put us in there, and know how to balance your performance, you know. And I know, you know, through Box the Pony especially, there was nights when I didn't think there were mob in the audience, and I'd do it, the performance a particular way, because I'd skip over the blackfella stuff, and then all of a sudden there's nights where there's big mob in it, and the play takes double as long because they're beating me to the punchline, and you know, but that's the joy of live performance, and that's the joy of, as a performer, yeah, I reach for my audience. I want to read my audience. I want to move them. If anyone's going to sleep, I want to wake them up, you know. If anyone's sitting there yawning, I want them to be turned around by the end of the piece. And I think it's just keeps you on your toes as a performer, so performance doesn't become stale, so you don't get bored. You know, finding those little tricks to improve every night, try something, not saying try things different to change choreography, but, you know, put a pause where you might not, or you're feeding off someone else's energy and you feed off your audience. That's where I'm always playing, you know. How close can I get to them? How much can I scare them?
How much
can I make them cry?
How much spit
can I get? Of course. I'm going to sit up the front. Give you, you know? And how many people you can shock, you know? That's what it's all about, and that's what makes it exciting for everyone. But I think as Indigenous, and, you know, we've got a lot of great performances. I know I said before sometimes our mob run amok. I'm only saying that years ago, you know. We've got absolutely a wonderful generation of performers, and it gives me so much joy, because as for yourself and Suri, you know, I've seen you come from Bloomin' asking me for $10 back in 1997. But you know what I mean? And you got your own show and you're doing so much, and I feel so much pride in knowing that I've helped other people on a journey. And Nana's still out there doing it, you know what I mean? And that's what I say to people. That's what I say to people. You know, this is hard, guys. I've been in it for 26 years and I'm still hustling. You know, I'm actually making more ground. But, you know, if you love this and this is what you are, you just got to – I'm like a little bulldog, mate. I bite on and I don't let go, you know. You got to sustain yourself. And that's – and you know, we should be writing our own stories. We should be telling our mob stories for us, but also catering for that wider community, because we need bums on seats to sell your stuff. You've got to be clever in your writing. Sometimes you've got to give over to what the theatre houses want, get your reputation up as being a hard worker, you deliver, and then as you get your reputation, then you can turn your plays and become more political or however you want to put them on. But you've got to earn your rep to get that opportunity. And you've got to play the game. There's a game out there. You've got to play it, but you're still – but I can say I've played the game, but I've never, ever lost who I am and why I'm doing it.
Wow. I feel like I can relate, but I can't, obviously. You know, I feel like for me, the hustle is real, you know, because I've been acting for 15 years now and I feel the same way. And it got to a point where that industry starts to define you, you know, and I felt myself losing myself a little bit, and I was taking them roles thinking that they're the roles that's going to get me somewhere in the industry. But then you've got to come back, ground yourself again, do some soul searching, find yourself again, and then all of a sudden I was writing my own stuff.
Yeah.
And then last year I started my own art collective, and we've done short films and things like that, and that's gone viral, you know, and that's because – it's real.
Yeah.
And it's come from here.
Yeah.
And that's what was missing for me in my acting journey. Yeah. So, yeah.
And, you know, sometimes the little roles, you need to sort of keep your performance fitness up, as I call it. Sometimes it might be just a little role, but in between the big roles, it's good to just keep in people's faces. You know, I've done stuff like I did Last Cab to Darwin, 3 minutes screen time. Yep, no worries, I'll be there. You want me? I've got to look in. I'm standing next to Jackie Weaver, Oscar winner, eh? You know, and that's what I did it for. And Mark Shepard. Mark Goldsmith. You know, so, you know, and sometimes you just have to do that. You've got to be in people's faces. You've got to work. You know, producers see you, directors see you, and you just never know what people have on their slates and where you might slot in, you know.
It shows that you work.
Yeah. You know, and after Police Rescue and Fallen Angels back in the 90s, and we won awards for those shows, and you could say, oh, I don't want to do anything, but I went and did a little GP, a little thing, and I think I played a prostitute in the corner for 2 minutes, you know, but I rocked them shorts.
That's all you need.
You know what I mean? But it's about, that's
real work.
But it's just about, you know, getting in people's faces, and because you never know who you might meet on set, and if people are impressed by you, you know, the industry talks.
I guess to in regards to what we were discussing earlier and the whole thing about the cultural obligations, you know, there's a thing of, do you find that sometimes, even though like you try to get to mainstream, there's this cultural obligation that you feel you still are sort of tossing and turning with in internally?
Yeah, absolutely. But I sort of came up with my own way of dealing with that. So especially like when you're looking at your old people and family and deaths and sorry business, you know. So I sort of made sure that I saw my old people when they were alive, you know, I'd make sure I'd go home and spend time with them. And if ever I, you know, found out they were sick and if I couldn't get there, I'd make sure that I had, that someone put a phone up to their ear so that I felt I've said my goodbyes. And, you know, a lot of them said to us, we understand what industry you work in, bub, and the responsibility, but we're more proud of you out there doing it than having to worry about sitting with us and crying for our loss, you know. Mm. And us, and that's, you have to find that, because unfortunately, industry doesn't wait for anyone, you know, to have time off for sorry business or stuff like that. There's also the cultural responsibility of when you've got non-Indigenous people wanting to do Indigenous stories and they ring you up and say, can you be my Blackie, you know. And you've really got to look at it and consider it, and then you've got to look at what knowledge you have and do you have the right to go, okay, yes, I'll be your spokesperson, you know, because that's a massive responsibility. And I pride myself in the fact that I've got a good work ethic in regards to having elders. There's at least, you know, 5 or 6 elders on each of my projects, so that, you know, I'm not bombarding them, because a lot of our elders, they don't know the format of theatre or television, and to explain them that you've got to twist this a little bit and have a little bit of that, but you can't have all of that. And so I don't sort of bombard them. So especially with Drover's Wife, I had my great-grandfather's story is laid through it, so I had 3 representatives from my family. Then I spoke to where we thought our grandfather was taken from, so I got a representative from the Gugu Yimitthin mob up there for language and dance and movement. And then I had a representative for the Snowy Mountains mob with language. So, and then because I said to him, if I can't do this right, I'll be struck by lightning and I wouldn't have had the success that I've had with the story. And it's bloody hard work when you got 6 people that you got to ring and read stuff out and go, does this sound right? Mm. You know, one of my uncles said, how does the story end for, you know, grandfather? And I went, well, in this version, not good, but in real life, he did real deadly. And the uncle said, oh, he went quiet. He said, oh, I'll get back to you. So, you know, and I had to wear what he said, but he said, no, I just, you know, thought about what you said and that's good. And then, you know, having, same with Black Chicks Talking. I had 10 women on the phone. In those days, we didn't have internet where you could, you know, do stuff and no, when you press that button and everyone can hear what you're saying. Yeah. It was always longer, and making sure that you have a responsibility when you're telling other people's stories to have the guts to allow them to see it, comment on it, you know, me and Siri, we're working on a project soon. I can't mention what it is, but it's it's in embargoed, but it's with MTC. It's a musical, and I'm working very closely with the people who I'm writing about. And, you know, one of the person the other day asked me to change a song. I wrote this big email and said, can I please just express why I'm using that particular song? Then we had a phone conversation and the uncle still wanted it gone, so I removed it. But and it's actually the song that he suggested is actually far more better, because it's you think the woman's going to give up, but she actually goes on and does. So it was actually a really nice dramatic moment, and you go, well, there you go, I've been gifted with something meant to be. But it is hard work, because you do have to get on the phone, you do have to explain stuff, but by goodness, when it's done right, you are so rewarded. And when you know your old people are happy, the old ancient people are happy, and you're gifted with you know, thoughts and accolades and the sharing, you know, and that's what we did since time began. And, you know, we have to be aware of those protocols, and we should uphold them. If we call yourself a blackfellow, well, then there's work to be done.
That's it.
There's work to be done when you've got to do stuff. It's not easy.
Yeah.
And you don't have a right. There's a responsibility. And if you call yourself a blackfellow, then you take that responsibility on. That's just the old ways, and that's just the way it was done.
Yeah.
And it's meant to be hard work.
Yeah.
You've got to earn what you're going to receive.
And whitefellas and collie breed need to understand that too, you know, that that it does take time. There's a lot of juggling. You've got to be flexible. And you just got to go with the flow, eh?
Yeah. You know? Well, I've been very lucky that, you know, MTC was a little bit spinning there because they haven't worked with it. I said, but if we do this right now at the beginning, put your money in here, bring those elders in, we're going to do a reading for them. They're going to have a conversation.
Time for preparing,
There's a first, you know, when we sit down at the end of it, of the show and tell and the reading, they're the first people to talk. Yeah. And we will sit and we will listen and we will wait and hear what they have to say. So they were a little bit, oh, my goodness. And I said, but trust me, if we get this right, then we have their blessings and we can move forward and we can put on a great show. Because if that foundation's rocky, I couldn't, you know, that's what I said when I was doing Black Chicks Talk. And I said, if I don't have the blessing, like the publisher, when I said that the women will have the final edit on their chapters, she nearly fell off a chair. She said, what are you doing? I said, but that's what I got to do, because if they don't support this book, I can't get out there and sell it for you. Because that spirit, that soul is not good, you
that's
know,
it, eh?
And
gammon.
yeah, and you know, and there was times where I had people ringing me up, and no, you got to get rid of that, and I'd always collaborate, and I'd always tell them why I did that, and one sister come back with all this black, you know, big Nick marker pen all through. I said, yeah, if you don't have that, you look no good when you read this bit, and you can't just give me one line on that page. But you know, but then when I talked through, it took me 3 hours, and then I sent it back to her, and she brought it back, and there was only one line missing. You know, but she felt good about it, and she heard where I was coming from. And, you know, your tongue goes dry and you bug it at the end of it, but you know, the rewards come because you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, it's part of who we are. You That's know, it. Our initiation ceremonies are gone, and but it's still a cultural practice of sharing stories, gathering.
It's still there. It's just it's in a different contemporary form,
isn't it? Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's sort of like, you know, you get the good things back. You know, karma comes back because you put the effort and the good things in at the beginning, and then your work prospers and blooms and blossoms and you go forth. Otherwise, you know, I just, you know, without that, I don't know what sort of a performer or person I'd be without that cultural element or that blackness that sits deep and just earths you, you know?
You know, and that thing where you mentioned before about when someone's asked you for specifics in regards to a brief of creating a show, and, you know, you've said that the idea of having to be their consultation. Not only are you someone who's just the artist, you have to take on all these other hats.
Yes.
We've had this conversation quite often, haven't we, Layla?
Yeah.
In regards to, you know, when is it time for us to have rest in between? But we don't as Aboriginal people. And again, feeling that obligation to cultural obligation and the, and you know, the perception of what people expect from us and what we know, what we actually live and breathe, are two different worlds completely.
Yeah. Like, you know, when you talk about rest and that, look, a lot of that comes, like, we had a great time on Redfern Now because it was black executive producers, black production house. There was still non-Indigenous people working there, but it was blackfellas leading, black directors, black writers, black lead actors, where you didn't have to explain every second thing that you'd done, you know, so that there was an understanding. And that was really nice to and we all felt so empowered.
Yeah.
And I think it's when we can control from the top positions, then it becomes a little bit easier because there's an understanding.
That's
you know,
it. We work better yeah. in community. As
yeah,
well,
yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, and look at Ilbidgeri with the stuff that they're
That's
doing.
It,
That's
eh?
Why you got Rachel Mazur at the helm and and leading that charge. You know, as I said through Redfern Now, that was Sally Riley and Erica Glenn and Darren Dale and Rachel Perkins with Blackfellow Films. And you know, I've got my own production company, and we know that there's certain things that we do in regards to cultural and that responsibility, so that it makes it feel good and right to prosper, you know, further down the track. And and when you're working, like we're working with David Jowsey, and he's run around with a lot of black fellas now, you know, and he, so it's nice that he's non-Indigenous, but he's worked with a lot of us mad fellas now, that he knows the lay of the land, and you know, and it's great when you can find that, because then the creativity is not strangled by, you know, questions. Regulations or legislation, expectations. You know, it's all the nation worth.
All the nations.
So it's nice. But that's when we were at our ultimate, like Redfern Now, because it was, you didn't, it, you know, there was people that understood, and you were just allowed to create. And we were very, very spoilt on that. It's a pity it doesn't come back.
Well, maybe. Any philanthropists listening?
But yeah, you're on Urban Dreaming, guys. We're actually here till 9 p.m. We're here with Leah Purcell in the studio live. So incredible. We've got a song for you right now, and we'll be right back.
I'm was born under the southern sun. I don't know where I belong. I don't know where I belong.
Hi, this is Alfie Akuri. You're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy.
Yes, that song just then was Native Tongue by Mojo Juju featuring Pacifica, Victoria Choir.
Mm.
Interesting. So Mojo Juju has long been one of Australia's most dynamic performers, and in her songwriting over the last few years in particular, has demonstrated her talent as an intense and driven artist, unafraid to wear her personal stories, challenges and wins on her sleeve. Yes, the new single Native Tongue is a portrait of the artist at her most personal yet produced piece, and featuring the stunning Pacifica Victoria Choir. Mojo tears apart the prejudices that she has had to face as a queer woman of colour, as well as navigating growing up in Australia and being of mixed ethnicity. The song is empowering and haunting at all the same time, and the music video is actually equally stirring.
Mm. Yeah, that's amazing stuff. Like, I've been out of the music scene for so long, and these young people that I've heard here tonight, the production standard and the quality, it's just on another level. Yeah. So good on everybody. Yeah. It's so awesome. I must go and Google these things.
Yeah. Yes. Wow.
Well, I love that Layla always brings in new tracks. It's just awesome. Yeah. And just seeing our mob grow and just expand into every category of the arts.
Yeah, it's so hard. Music is so hard.
That's it. I was saying Arnie Lear as well, like, you know, because this type of music so experimental and moody and deadly, like, and we're not on mainstream as much, we do sort of remain this underground sort of community, but not just mob but mainstream don't realize that we're so far ahead in our craft, you know. Mm. So we need to be on a lot more platforms than what we're given.
Yeah, exactly.
But not forgetting the allies that we have on the way, you know, and the idea of being given a platform like the show specifically in a non-Indigenous environment.
That's
just incredible.
Diversity, you know? So, within diversity, that is Aboriginality and Torres Strait Islander.
For sure. Yeah. So we don't have much time left, unfortunately. We've only got 5 minutes before we finish. But I just want to, I guess, in regards to, you know, with Leah, your work that you do, like I said, is incredible. We've always being in admiration of what you do. And I guess there's a lot of listeners out there I shouldn't even say out there. They're with us right now. Yeah. The idea of telling, just giving advice, really. What would you give advice to the young fellas and boys and girls, as well as, I guess, aspiring actors, people who want to get into the industry?
Yeah. Look, I think it is important to get some sort of education on it. Like I didn't, and it was very scary and daunting. And I wish, even if it's just to get the terminology so that when you're on set or you're in the theatre, you're not so in the dark, so you feel that you've got, you know what they're talking about.
Jargon.
Yeah, the jargon of it, so you can understand. And so I do, and it's about practice makes perfect. You know, it's practicing. Don't do community stuff just to keep your, I call it performance fitness up. So when you are called up for an audition or when a job does present itself, you're ready to go. You're not unfit. You know, you've got to look after yourself. You've just got to, if you really want this sort of industry, you've got to have a thick skin, and you've got to find the way to get yourself in there and be seen and be heard, whether that's writing your own stuff, performing your own crew, support one another. It is a big, wide world out there, and we can all have a crack at the cherry. Mm. You know, it's about helping each other up, because when one person comes up, they'll always bring someone with them. And, you know, and that's what I can honestly say, that I'm so proud of all the young people that I've helped along the way, and ones that are in community that haven't gone on, but I've given them an opportunity to see something that they could do, you know, and make something of themselves, you know. And that's what I say, if you don't want to, performance can also give you that confidence to go up and get that job or do something for yourself, because we have to look out, you have to look out for yourself. My mother always said, you got to look out for number one, and number one is you. Not in an egotistical way, but when you're right, your family's right. When your family's right, community's right.
Mm.
Beautiful way to finish off, guys. Thank you so much, Leah, for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Layla, for joining us. Yes, you're an Urban Dreaming. Such a pleasure to have you all tonight.
Good night.
And we'll see you next week.
Good night, Jupla.
Take care.
You have been listening to Urban Dreaming with your hosts, Sue Rummy and Miss Elanius, a show that aims to bridge the gap and close the divide. You can stay up to date by adding us on your Facebook and download the podcast from joy.org.au. Urban Dreaming on Joy 94.9.
Service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.